Hoki mai, ki te wairua o te pai, ki te kainga kaipo, ki konei noho ai. Hoki tonu mai, hoki tonu mai, hoki tonu mai, ki te wairua o te pai, ki te kainga kaipo, ki konei noho ai. Hoki tonu mai, ki te wairua o te pai, ki te
to the morning show with Aaron. That is Hoki Mai by Te Kahu Reremoa. And in the studio, I've got Ngaranoa Renata. Good morning.
Hi. Atamari e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa. Me etahi atu iwi e noho ana i o koutou kāinga ki te whakarongo ki tēnei kaupapa i te ata nei. Just...
And that was... That was a song. First of all, this is the Kairongoa segment. I should mention that. You chose that track, Ngaranoa. Why did you choose that one to start with?
Our relationship with Te Kahu Reremoana, Te Kahu Reremoa from Whanganui a Tara, which is the Wellington area. She lives and breathes her music and the telling of pūrākau, which is storytelling, and tonga pūoro. And those things in her life are significant, and we have a relationship with Te Kahu Reremoa through a new organisation called Oro Māori.
Yeah.
And as friends too, friendship, a deep friendship.
So what is Oro Māori?
So Oro Māori came out of a desire for tonga pūoro, which is traditional and contemporary Māori instruments of there's a whole field, I can just see them before me, of different types of instruments which originate from te ao Māori but are also being brought forward. There are new creations also within that in terms of the making of instruments and what the instruments are made from.
Okay.
Mm.
So this is to boost that community and that art form and that sort of thing.
To share that those oro, those sounds, which have ancestral connections with nature as well, with Papatuanuku and Rangi Nui and all that is in between, and to invite people to have the opportunity to listen to other sounds from another worldview, which is te ao Māori, so they can be nourished and go, wow, what is that? What does that look like? What is that taonga puoro,
yeah,
musical instrument, you know, and desire to play it. And so in the future we would want to have a school which is devoted to accessing, so the younger generation can engage with the making of instruments from this cultural background.
Okay. And so, and we're going to talk more about taonga puoro later on, but you wanted to talk about te reo to start with, didn't you?
Yes, te reo rangatira. Very recently there was a major celebration through a 4 days of performance called Matatini, which was held in Tāmaki Makaurau at Eden Park. And it was a rich offering of musicality from kapa haka, both contemporary and traditional. And there were different sections within that offering of the performances of each rōpū group that was able to be there. And they were also had come from a regional competition. So it's a competition.
Yes.
And there are judges which judge their certain aspects of their performance. One thing I would like to say here was there was no people's choice. Ah. And I think it was clear that there was quite a lot of surprise at who won the major.
Okay.
And that's fine. That's fine, but it's just interesting that when you have people's choice, you may actually add some more dynamics to who's chosen and why.
Yeah.
With the crowd, you know, giving an indication as you do on other portals of this nature, you know, competition.
Yeah, yeah, band comps and movie festivals and yeah, there's often people's choices. Yeah.
It would be good to. It originates, the Matatini originates from a Polynesian festival back in the 70s, and it has become. It was also Pacific people who participated with their music and dance.
What was it called back then? Do you remember?
The Polynesian Festival.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it has evolved in one way towards being competitive,
yeah,
which is not everyone's jam by any means, you know. People admire that commitment, discipline.
Can I ask
that goes into that type of performance of Māori waiata and the various forms of waiata and haka.
Can I ask a question about competitiveness? Because I know there are actually, surprising to people in our culture, but there are many cultures around the world that where competitiveness was not a value that was considered to be important. And even games were not competitive games. They were a different type of game. Traditional Māori culture, was competitiveness a value?
Has that even survived? Yeah, competitiveness definitely belongs to individualism. From that understanding where, you know, there's a standout performer or a standout haka person or leadership. They would, you know, leadership. But it was chosen or made very clear as time went on from early childhood that they would manifest these pukenga, these skills. And so you would be encouraged to go into your field and or given a lot of support to do so. But that was a very different lifestyle too, you know. The village life, which is where those who are around you are also related to you. You're from the same tribe or sub-tribe as in a hapū.
Yeah.
That competitiveness was encouraged. It's probably the wrong word because competitiveness too gives me somewhere in my own education through the state education system, I see I was competing, you know, I was competing to get the top mark in a spelling test.
Yeah. We all know about that, yeah. That's the experience.
And that was somehow gave me the experience of like, oh, I'm really good at that. but and it was confirmed because I was then given a certificate at some point too. But in that sense, I think it encouraged individualism, and it would be fair to say that Māori were more enjoyed a collective spirit of, you know, let's do this as a whānau, an extended whānau, and that rhythm really suited who we are and how we prefer to go forward. Yeah, rather than separating out, you know, who's really good at it and then dismissing those who may not have the same level of pukinga, skill base. Yeah, it's very inclusive.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had
discussions with other Pākehā people on the sideline of soccer fields and things like that, and some people are very upset that they're trying to take competitiveness out of sport because it's just little kids, right? Very upset by that, and competitiveness, they say it's a competitive world out there, you've got to learn, there's teaching the kids about competitiveness because it's a competitive world. And I thought through my life and I thought, I know what it's like to be competitive, that feeling to want to win, and that's not a useful headspace to be in my working life, where I've got pretty much all my working life, I can't think of a job where competitiveness was good. I had to work with people, so I think it's not a beneficial thing to mainstream culture anyway, and it's good for people to hear that there are other cultures where it wasn't valued in that way, and somewhere that it was just didn't exist.
Values, values, and what do we encourage going forward with those who are before us and who will become the leaders of tomorrow? You know, and equity around that. So that we're a long way off from achieving that, having equity, you know, that pyramid, the pyramid of employment, who are valued, what you know.
Yes.
That's another whole field of industrialism that has been fiercely attacking us for showing that, well, you know, you only need one at the top. Well, you don't. You need everybody. Mm. Everybody, you know, that equity. And you need both feminine and masculine, male and female, and all that is in between to contribute for a healthy society.
Yeah. Mm. So back to what you're wanting to talk about.
Te Reo Rangatira, which means a chiefly language, currently has the opportunity for, as in the Māori world, we state very quickly tribalism. So we look for those subtitles, and when we're, you know, visually looking at something of who is a person who is of Māori descent, and all their whakapapa back to their tribe or their hapū. And that seems to be something that's come right forward. I would maintain that for us to become a nation that has, to become a Māori nation, that is an important aspect, but we then also need to ensure that we are a nation. We agree as the four winds, you know, from the north to Taitukaro, and from the bottom of the South Island, from, you know, Ngāti Porou on those sides, and to Tai Hauauru, that we are also, our strength as being a nation. This is the history throughout Europe of nations that have risen to a peak in their history. They have really agreed on that aspect very clearly, so that their nation can also surge forward.
So we live in an era of nations currently, and have done for a couple of hundred years, I guess. I'm not a historian.
Well, Europe gives us that history of how they, you know, the rise and fall of an empire is really, they came out of tribalism, then they sat in a round table, if you like, and agreed, okay, Yep, we know where we're from, we have a coat of arms, but we will act collectively as a nation.
I think there was a fair amount of acting collectively at the point of a gun, though, as well, in Europe.
Oh.
I think it was a bloody phase to get to where they are, but the nation states have, it's been a relatively, much more stable era than the previous one that they had in Europe.
Well, in terms of Te Ao Māori, if we to continue on the journey which we're on the up in terms of where we're heading, is our language base to be able to describe our experiences and to connect with other people, we have to have more words. And I've got an extensive collection of dictionaries which have been written over the years, which hold new words to describe not only a daily experience, but experiences within spirituality. Those conversations can be held in Māori to describe those experiences. One of the original languages that holds that and has maintained that is Sanskrit. Sanskrit is a language of what they call a language of light.
Yeah.
And it holds an extraordinary amount of words which describe experiences which are not related to a domestic situation. They are of a spiritual nature. And
okay.
They describe those experiences intimately, I would say.
I suspect English doesn't have anywhere near as many words for that experience.
English is the number one language in the world, but it has also gathered its language base from many other languages.
Oh, yeah, from all over.
So it's a very potent language in its offering, and it's just a language that has that in its to offer the world.
So what's the importance of having new words or a complete set of words? I'm not quite sure what the right phrase is.
When these words too, these kupu will come from those who sit in a space who have a fluency in te reo and can combine words to articulate computer, roro hiko. So brain, hiko is a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
And that those two kupu, those two words come together to express what a computer is.
Lightning brain.
A lightning brain.
Yeah. Actually, that's quite good, really. That sums it up pretty well.
Yeah. And those new words have to come from the main base of te reo. I'm just saying they do.
Yeah.
Other words have come in which are transliterations, which don't do any justice to the actual original base of our reo, which has thousands of years of history already. But it has been lost too over time. So there is an esoteric language, a language which belongs to expressing and explaining other experiences. One of the words that has become quite normal to hear, and say a person might say, "Oh, what are you doing?" They say, "Oh, I've been to a meditation workshop." You know, that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
So we need to find, or we have found, there are words which express that in Māori, and that's important for us as we become a nation, a Māori nation. And we create these layers of our language, continue to create them, so we have a lot of words. We don't have – there's more than one dictionary. There's many dictionaries. I worked in Kura Kaupapa Māori in Whangaroa, and the extensive languaging which has been carried out to cater for the field of pūtaiao science, it's extensive. And those tamariki and taiohi who are exposed to that within that kura system have access to those, so
how
they
you,
can explain.
A lot of science, they actually use, English-speaking scientists use another language to name things in science. use like old Latin. I think it's Latin. Like, how do you leave things in Latin if it's in Latin?
Yeah, so one of the things that I'd like people to know and to remember is that this whole landscape here in Aotearoa was originally known in Māori first.
Yep.
It was explained and expressed. And the ancestors brought with them a language base from where they had come from. And so they used kupu to describe, which came from their original landscape when they settled here, like Tōtara. It was called a Tōtara. It didn't have a Latin name. That came later.
No. Very much.
That came later. And that was because the botanists who came here as a settler nation wanted to describe it in their language.
Yeah.
So that was the second language, was a whānau that they belonged to, their genealogy, their whakapapa. So there was already extensive language that was known by our people to describe the forest.
So do people know the roots of a word like Tōtara? Why that word was chosen?
Yes, and that's the what we call the esoteric language. All language it originates from sound. So when we speak to each other, we're actually combining sound. So the word, the kupu, Tōtara has a meaning, but it also has a vibration.
Yeah.
Sound is vibration, you know. And so we layer it into creating sounds. We put those sounds together, and that's how languages are created. So we can communicate. And the key to this development, this whanaketanga, is that we continue to develop more and more words and give our mokopuna, our tamariki, more language, access to language that can express and connection.
There's so much depth to this.
You go back and back, your whakapapa of oro, so it's oro is sound, and that's why I really enjoy the work of taonga pūoro, because it's a language, it's a whole language, which... It's more on other levels. We can express ourselves through those sound and the vibration of those sounds, but we can also explain their origins, where they originated from, their whakapapa. And so we have a great opportunity, and we'll take it. We'll take that.
And so at the start, you were talking about trying to create... a main language for the Māori nation, like, as opposed to...
tribal languages?
Tribal languages, yeah, or tribal
dialects. I don't know whether I said that, but I think you...
Yeah, you tell me what you're saying, yeah.
We're going to have tribal languages. That's a given because it identifies, like, the reo from the Taranaki people, if you're schooled within dialects, you can pick up, they're from Taranaki.
Yeah.
It's like music, you know, when you, an instrument, you go, oh, that's from India, that instrument, you know. So applying the same knowledge base, if you happen to have it.
So what was I misinterpreting there about?
Well, I'm more along the lines of we're quite fixed into tribalism.
Yeah.
You know, they're from Waikato, or they're from Te Taitukara, or they're from the East Coast, and they're from Te Arawa, and that's why they can do that. And we all have our own histories within our tribalism, but if we are to continue going forward and to become a nation, to become more than, dare I say it, an empire in our own right, we must join together as a nation, not dismiss everything we have, pull it all together and go, okay, you know, look at the richness of what we already have and make sure our tamariki and those who are our leaders of tomorrow have that well in hand for connection, for expression. And aren't those the things that we want as going forward for being able to express ourselves, you know, and connect connections so that people will want something, maybe learn some things from us that they don't have in their own cultures.
Okay, shall we move on to Taonga Puoro?
Yeah, how are we going?
Oh, we're good.
So Taonga Puoro, there was a renaissance of Taonga Puoro. I think I've spoken briefly about this in a previous podcast last year, but this year I'm definitely going to bring it forward as a expression that is receiving more and more. People are recognizing and going, oh, what's that? You know, where is that from? What does it look like? They may hear it, but they don't actually know what it looks like, that instrument. And I think there's a lot of interest because the sounds are very, they're different. You have to say they're different. You know, I was really looking at my own journey into Taonga Puoro, and I realized very early on, when I first heard the Western classical flute, I was absolutely like, what's that? Never heard it before. I'm genuinely never seen one, never heard it. When I did, I wanted to play this instrument. Not only did I want to listen to it, but I also wanted to manifest it in my life. And the other instrument, from a wind instrument point of view, that I became very, how do you say, interested in was the shakuhachi, which is a Japanese flute.
Okay.
So I've had one all my, since that time, but never paid attention to it in the same way that I paid attention to the Western classical flute, but it's come out again, and I realized it's all related to Taonga Puoro, to Taonga Puoro is generally played with an embouchure, which is the way you hold your mouth.
I heard that word.
Embouchure, which is a French word.
I know, I heard it. Oh, is it a cricket commentary yesterday? One of the cricket commentators was talking, I don't know how they got onto that subject, but I actually heard it yesterday. Anyway, continue, please.
Yeah, embouchure is to do with the way that the you create sound, and then it goes through a wind instrument, and that sound, yeah, how sound is created. And it's
you kind of shape the sound with your mouth.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You have to spend a bit of time.
Yeah, it doesn't come instantly.
And with the instruments itself, you know, just the actual instruments, how they're made, and the expertise that goes into making one so that it does produce sounds that that can be heard easily, perhaps, and that's an art form in itself, to find instrument makers.
Yeah,
who can make these instruments of a level that you can say, oh, I think I can play that. You don't want something that you go, oh, how long is it going to take me to get the sound out of this instrument? Not that you want it to be easy either, but the embouchure in terms of playing, I came across that word when I was and was very clearly taught about it in terms of playing the Western classical flute,
yeah,
because of the pitch, the different octaves that you would have to achieve.
You do with your mouth.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, see, I don't know anything about the flute.
Yeah, you do. Have to, and also the speed of the breath as it moves to for the higher octaves and lower octaves, and maintaining that, and how that vibration also, in terms of your physiology, to maintain that and those sounds, because Western classical music is based on tones. So you go from A B C. You know, you have different major keys or minor keys.
Yeah.
Well, in other musics, such as Taonga Puoro, there are sounds in between. Maybe you call them quarter notes or half notes.
Yeah. So the scale, the Western scale, doesn't apply.
No.
Yeah.
No, they've tried. They did try. There has been research done. It can apply in part of the explanation. You can notate it, you know, under a treble clef or a bass clef, but it's still, there are missing notes that are in between.
Yeah.
It cannot be notated.
Maybe a different set of frequencies. I'm out of my depth when I start talking about that, but I've seen a few things.
That's the one, different set of frequencies.
Yeah, yeah. So where is all this heading?
We're heading into a place where people have, where we have the opportunity to be invited to either become a practitioner of Tonga Puro or to enjoy and participate in hearing the sounds and appreciation of those very rich sounds. Which have not been heard before.
Do you think people will...
extensively, like the orchestra?
We've heard a lot of that. Will people start? Do you think something will happen like it gets incorporated into popular music?
Oh, absolutely! It already is.
Well, yeah.
Okay. So the orchestra I'm talking about, like the orchestras, Tonga Puro artists, Horo Mona.
Yes.
To put his name. Not my podcast. He played with the with the orchestras. Yeah, it's been done, and it needs to be done more and more. So you get this place where you go, whoa, violin and the other sounds of the orchestra meet another cultural vortex of sound.
And that's a very rich, creative place.
That's a very rich, creative space.
Jazz and the blues and rock music all came out, my understanding, all came out of the intersection between the African culture that came over to the US with slaves and the Western music, and they combined, and that this whole 20th century was such a fertile period musically because of that.
Yeah, well, you have your
purity. And that's just two cultures.
Purity of sound, too, is where some people sit. They become purists. They play a particular type of music and they stay with that.
Yeah.
Because it fulfills their musical desire as well. And they, you know, they put that forward. But we have many opportunities which we'll agree to participate in, or to keep the sounds, first of all, in their entirety.
As a base.
You have to actually have the recording material, which is not yet available to fully record Tonga Puro, even the advanced.
Like how to mic them up and things like that is a skill yet to be developed.
Yet to be developed.
To be fully developed, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, all right. There's same as the topic earlier, there's so much depth behind this. I feel like there's just this is the tip of the iceberg of knowledge and things that are happening in these areas.
Yeah, I look forward to the months and years ahead where the equipment that can record, or the acoustic sound, that spaces that we sit in, there will be a genuine appreciation of these rich oro sounds can offer. And so I'm very, very grateful for Oro Māori as a group, as a company, as a rōpū going forward, offering these to our people, all people.
Hey folks, we've been talking to Ngaro Noa Renata, our Kairongoa segment, about Te Reo and Tonga Puro. And thank you for coming in this morning. Good to see you. This is your first time on the air this year, which is the last day of summer. So
yes, it is.
We've got in just in time.
Yes. Just got in time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Aye, kia ora.